Good evening. This is Module 7, Talk 4. The book for this module is What Makes You Not a Buddhist by Khyentse Rinpoche, who has been very insulting to our egos. The topic of the book is the four seals. This is sometimes known as the four marks and occasionally as the four norms. The first seal is impermanence, and the second seal is suffering, which is the topic for this evening. Khyentse Rinpoche's statement of the second seal is all emotions are pain. All emotions are pain. I thought it might be interesting to look at another book on the same topic, which is the Four Seals. This book is called Indisputable Truth. It is by Chökyi Nyima Rinpoche, who is a very great and wonderful teacher. And he's definitely more... Am I talking loud enough for everyone? He is definitely more traditionally Tibetan. And on this sheet that we went around, by the way, this sheet is on the web. In Indisputable Truth, he gives a different translation for the four seals. And you can see them on the sheet. And the second one says, everything defiling is painful. So, are these contradictory? Is one of them wrong, one of them right? How are we going to understand this? What is the seal telling us, which is indisputable? How do we understand it, regardless of the translation? So, to begin with, we have been doing basic shamatha meditation here for 2 years, doing it here and giving meditation instruction. And by the way, that's always a good idea. We don't always have the same thing to say to each person. So getting individual meditation instruction is a good idea. We encourage you to have a regular daily practice, if at all possible. But at the very least, all of you have been coming here and suffering through an hour of it, one way or another, or not suffering, whichever. And we've done various teachings. We've taught meditation. We've taught Trungpa Rinpoche's teachings on working with emotions. And we realize how quickly our emotions change, and we realize how the quality of them is always a story about me and something else. And he advised relaxing and letting go of the story and feeling the emotion. Then we studied Tonglen, which is sending and taking, and the Lojong slogans which go along with that. So, if we're going to study this book, we need to take our previous practice and bring our practice into how we go about understanding these slogans. So maybe people could, at this point, explain how they feel about all emotion is pain, or all, how does that go?
Yeah, all emotions
are pain.
All defiled states, he says. All defiled emotions, whatever, are painful. And someone said, Well, is, I don't think joy is painful. And it's really good, I forget who said that, but it's very good that someone said that. It makes for an honest discussion. It keeps us teachers from selling snake oil, for one thing. So when people come up with what they have to say, it's really useful. How are we going to understand this second seal? I'd like to have as many volunteers as possible. Yeah?
I'd like to jump in if I could. Could we substitute...
No. come on. Okay, I won't harass you too much.
We're talking about attachments, right?
Yes.
Okay, then why don't we just say attachments are pain eventually, and then the good and bad or the intense pleasurable or intense painful, makes sense to me. But it seems to me all I'm doing is translating emotion for excessive grabbing.
Yeah, okay, that's really good. So I'm really glad you said that. So you're seeing that the word emotion here means whatever we're experiencing with attachment? Yeah. What does attachment mean?
Demand of some sort of grabbing, rather than just letting go of whatever is coming and going, slowing it down a little bit. I'm grabbing it.
Yeah. That's really good.
It's expectation.
Yes. Expectation. Yeah, in other words, looking forward to bliss or looking forward to suffering. Yeah, you want to say some more about that?
It's a setup.
That's great. Okay.
Either way, there. I know there's a slogan... I can't remember what it is exactly, but it's I can't remember which one it is. But it's to that end, it's really expecting that somehow.
What about fruition?
Yes. Can you say the full
measuring
of brain?
Don't expect fruition or something.
Oh, is it don't expect applause?
Don't
expect fruition. Yeah,
right.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
The original one was abandon all hope for fruition.
Abandon all hope
for fruition.
Yeah. Okay, so how is that useful in understanding this? Maybe you've already said it. I don't know.
I think what Megan was saying, is just that don't set yourself up for, because you really don't know what the outcomes will be. That if you are so, if you have these expectations, then you have hope.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that doesn't always happen. There's no clear outcome. So things are impermanent.
Or there's a bad outcome.
Yeah.
There's pinning your hope that there's going to be some kind of outcome that means something.
But my question is, I sort of look through again, like, what's pain? So when we say it's painful, so he's not saying it's suffering.
That's an interesting point, isn't it?
It's different, because it's like I think of, like, when I, stub my toe because somebody left something in the way, well, that hurts. That's physical pain. If I then want to spend the next day angry because somebody did that and they wanted to do it, that's suffering.
Okay.
I was sort of thinking pain is like a message that something's gone wrong.
But don't you get to a point in suffering where it's just painful?
I think so. suffering is not wanting the pain or rejecting the pain or attaching to the pain. That's actually one thing I think instead of just calling it attachment, because sometimes we reject things as well. So it's the opposite of attachment. Instead of trying to cling to an emotion, we try to reject an emotion. So I think attachment's not quite enough,
mm-hmm.
because there are other aspects to what we can do with our emotions. We can reject them or we can attach to them. So, and I think that's spot on, which is that pain is different than suffering. Suffering has to do with desire. Pain has to do with a sensation, feeling.
I was just going to say unwanted desire.
Were you going to say something?
Yes, I was going to say that there are too many, different phrases to describe one word in the Webster's Dictionary, so I don't like the labels, but plan and enjoy the action, don't plan for the result, it's just, how can you explain something in the words as well? The first definition, second definition, third definition, arcane definition, old English meaning, translation, we're caught in language, and so I say enjoy the action. Find the result. That's what it says to me.
Okay. I don't think we have to use the dictionary. I think we have to ask what the word means to us. But yeah, I see your issue, and I would have said something like that, that attachment to results, going after results for me, leads to suffering. Michael, do you have anything to comment on the use of the word pain? Is that really, why does it say pain? Do you know?
Well, I was looking at what really, I was reading through the text, and we're looking at the Buddha's historical path, and night he spent under the Bodhi tree and being attacked by all these different kinds of attractions or seeming attractions. And, he just wasn't buying into it. But I think that the issue of pain here has to do with the sense of fickleness. Fundamentally, emotions, as he describes, these are all very temporary and impermanent, and they're constantly shifting. So, for instance, some of the illustrations he used was one person likes what the other person hates, or what you like you end up hating, or what, the instability and the inconsistency and the utter kind of fickleness of what we call things we cherish, because it can easily turn into what we would recognize as a source of pain and poison and suffering. So he's saying, and I think we're still around, we're all talking about the same thing, attachment, trying to cherish, self-cherishing. It's all holding on to something and trying to turn something into a state of permanence. So that's the problem when we put these emotions on the shrine and exalt them and deify them, that we fundamentally become a slave to them. So that's pain. Doesn't matter what the emotion is. I mean, even the word joy, which is a favorite out of, isn't joy not painful? isn't joy fun? But, when you turn joy into a thing and you're holding it out there thinking, if I don't have joy today, I'm not going to be happy, then you're setting yourself up for being miserable. Because then you're anticipating what that means. No one really knows. When people talk about joy as something that's actually spontaneous and coming of itself, it's indescribable, actually. So you just use a word, but you can't replicate it.
Yeah, so this is very... I'm still struggling with this idea a lot. But, it seems to me like I sort of get... that the emotion is seems like, well, that's an experience or a sensation, right? It's or something, and you're in it, and that doesn't seem to be painful in and of itself, except to the extent, I suppose, it's physical sensation, but it's on both ends of the experience, right? It's wanting it before it happens, and then wanting it after it happens. Or not wanting it when it comes, and then doing something else with it after it's gone. And somehow getting hung up on the idea that I should go get it, or I should worry about something that just disappeared. Those seem problematic. But in the middle of it, when it's happening, I'm still having a hard time with that part.
It's the tyranny of the should.
What?
It's the tyranny of the should. Mm. What should be or shouldn't be. Mm.
Yeah.
There's an excellent essay on that.
Well, whenever we have love for some object, that raises all kinds of problems, doesn't it? A person or a thing or money or wealth or a phone or whatever it is. Because what can happen? We could lose it. Yeah. Love turns into its opposite. Love in just about every opera. Operas are great sources of klesha, aren't they? Operas are
all klesha.
Yeah, operas are all klesha, right?
Yeah.
Yes. There's love, and then there's envy, and then there's betrayal, and then there's enmity, and then there's murder. Should we revisit at all the business about being insulted? There was a fair amount of talk last week. There was some discussion, but a lot of you weren't here for that. I feel insulted by Kensei Rinpoche. Why do we feel that he's insulting us? Is there a slogan we can bring into that?
Don't feel insulted.
What?
It's slogan 58, don't feel insulted by the books you read in class.
Well, what's going on there? He's making fun of me. He's making fun of me. Yeah.
It may be inappropriate, but what comes to me is don't take life too seriously.
Well, that...
It ends.
Okay. How are you going to implement that? By just giving in and not trying too hard? That doesn't seem to be the way. How can we be intense and energized and still do what you say?
Like I said earlier, and it's so quick.
Yeah.
I get a fixed color. It says, you know, plan the action, enjoy the action, don't plan the results.
Okay.
But to me, this is all a mirror of the sitting practice. When you're sitting, you're being present now. And when you are out in life, all present now. And so when you get out of that groove, that's when stuff starts to happen. That pain comes, and desire comes, and fear comes. And if you pull yourself back into your breath, so-called, you know, the same kind of example, it's doing the same thing, right?
Is that? Well, if you can remember those things.
But isn't that the point of the sitting?
Well, that's one point.
Yes.
That isn't all.
To train,
yeah.
So that when you're in the world, you remember and you you bring yourself back to center.
You just arrive rather than bring yourself remembering to something else. Actually,
yes.
It's sort of like totally fresh. First moment, that's actually the thing.
I'm trying to think about where something like when you go somewhere and it's just beautiful and you think, this is really nice that I get to see this beautiful thing right now.
What's the problem?
And that's what I'm saying. So isn't that an emotion? Like I'm looking
no.
and saying, wow, this is...
Now, he defines, it's very interesting, I don't know if everybody read this carefully, but he goes through on pages 48 to 51 what these emotions are.
Okay, so
he generally talks
about
the fickleness and the relativity of it all.
So it's really...
But he really talks about passion, aggression, pride, prejudice, and envy. That's what he really talks about.
Okay.
So he doesn't... But the seal says all emotions are pain. So it's not just aggression, pride.
But
it's love.
But what he defines as emotions, that's the issue. If you say emotions are just these eight things.
So passion is what generally is the rubric under which love falls.
Okay.
And passion is not known to be necessarily a stable, dependable proposition, as hopefully everybody understands here.
Are we trying to avoid all pain?
No.
I mean, pull ourselves back to...
Who said that?
I wouldn't think so.
That would be aggression.
So it's...
You're trying to push something away. Yeah.
It's just a statement of truth. All emotions are pain. It's not saying you shouldn't experience them.
Okay, so...
Well, I thought the same thing. You know, I mean, when I read this on sort of just face value, it sort of says to me when I say all emotions are pain, so therefore I thought, well, if I have pain, then it's bad. But that's my own, that's what I bring to it.
Mm.
You know, that's my own stuff about thinking pain.
Okay, and that's not intended here. So let's get back to something Elise said. A beautiful afternoon, and it's just wonderful. But did we try to set up a beautiful afternoon? And are we going to be unhappy if it doesn't happen? There we have attachment, right?
Yeah. It was just, you know, happened to go out once, and oh, it's so nice. It's beautiful.
Makes me think of the slogan again. I can't remember. It's about the dream.
Regard all dharmas.
Oh, regard all dharmas as dreams. Okay.
Dreams.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
So sorry. So how does that eliminate what she said? Dream.
Because you know, if one were to embrace everything, the beautiful day, the painful moment, whatever, suffering of and feelings of all stripes, to realize that it's like a dream comes and goes, it's surreal, it's not really grounded in anything, it's just a moment. That's what that makes me think of.
And that's an absolute slogan, and it works very well. Because what is absolute? It's not something complicated. Absolute means that the me isn't present. That's all it means. That at that point, the me mind has just isn't there. So therefore, whatever happens is has the quality of an intense dream. Not vague dream, but intense dream. It's totally real. The pain, the joy are all totally real, and they aren't about me.
If Elise is out walking and she has gratitude for the beauty that she is in, is that about her?
Gratitude. I would say no. Gratitude is unconditional. Gratitude is just, I'm grateful that it's happening, whatever it is. It's not a choice thing. Yeah.
Whatever it is, because I,
The only thing is, what makes a beautiful day? If you take that same day and it's negative 20 and it's very cold and there's winds whipping around, is it still a beautiful day? I think that's where you're bringing yourself to that day, that moment. When you say it's a beautiful day as opposed to, oh, it's a miserable day. We've brought in judgment, and so we are bringing in ourself. And if we are grateful, we feel gratitude for that day, or do we feel not very great gratitude for that day because we consider it to be miserable. It's about us. It's about our perception. But the day is what it is. So I think if you can look at the negative 20 day, blistering cold, and think that that's a beautiful day, at the same time that you think that a beautiful, 70 degrees, sunny, birds chirping, you probably might have a little more grasp of being in the moment without injecting yourself.
But I think if you just, instantly react.
Pardon?
I think if you just instantly react, you're not... I mean, I guess if you're responding to it, the beautiful day or whatever, you go, wow, this is great. I mean, it's just a reaction. It's not like you're thinking.
Well, it's a judgment, though.
But it happens. I mean, it's like a flash. So sudden, and I don't think you're consciously making a judgment. Maybe, it's just joy happens to you.
I think
it doesn't seem bad.
There's something because the pleasant is maybe that it's something that my visual feel, I like in my brain, or that there's a pleasant physical sensation associated with it. There's a nice breeze and I like that feeling on my skin, but it's not, so I don't know, that it's not me. But it's not, I'm not like attached, like I'll go walk whether it's nice or not. But sometimes it's just like, it's a pretty day. I walk up and there's a tree that's in bloom and that's just gorgeous. And I know it's only in bloom today and tomorrow. The next time I walk by it'll look different, but it's, in that moment, it's really pleasant to have that. And I didn't make the tree bloom, I just saw it.
So we went through this last week when people were talking about how after they refused to stop enjoying an ice cream, after we went through this discussion about the whole issue of impermanence and... your enjoyment. Nobody says you can't enjoy anything.
Right.
That isn't what he... I think that's interesting. He's very provocative. He just wants to, push your buttons. My buttons, certainly. I think everybody's buttons got pushed on these and provoke you to actually try to explore what are we taking for granted here? What are we just riding on surface with and saying, this is how it is. No problem. Until we realize our whole life is being racked by the problems we create around trying to have nice experiences and avoid unpleasant experiences. So what do you think he's really getting at in terms of talking about these emotions? What do you think he really wants you to do?
Understanding and kind of transcending it so that it doesn't affect you.
To become aware of how you're reacting.
That's exactly what he says, yeah.
You're right, he spends 3 or 4 pages, and you could find excerpts there that all refer to... He's storytelling, right? Like he likes to tell stories, so he tells it as if this is happening to the Buddha rather than you or me. But...
Or himself.
Yes.
He's not talking about himself.
Yeah, he's perfectly willing to make fun of himself. I mean, look at this caricature.
Yeah, exactly.
He put in the,
right. In a picture. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I liked the way he talked about, the different countries and how one country liked this country and then 30 years later they didn't like each other. And, it shows how our minds work, how the humans work.
Friends
and that's what we
enemies.
Do.
Yeah.
This is my best friend, and then 3 years later, to hell with her. So, that's what we do. So I thought that was very clear. Mm-hmm. I didn't find offense to that at all.
So I think if we are getting angry about the book, the useful slogan there is drive all blames into oneself. In other words, be aware of how you're reacting.
It's funny because if you look at some of the Amazon book reviews, the people reviewing were also offended. Yeah. We're all going.
That wasn't just us.
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, book reviews can have a lot of. The reviewer can have a lot of self involved in that. Well, I thought it was useful to bring in the four immeasurables, which we worked with about a year ago, and it was with a book by Pema Chodron, as I recall, called, what was that? It's the first book we saw. The Places That Scare You, yeah. Mm. And this is a practice, remember. This book by Khyentse Rinpoche is not a practice book. He says so right at the beginning. He's not giving you any practices. So we have to make use of all the practices we've come to this far in order to bring our mind to something like this. So do you remember the four immeasurables? May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. This is often a practice that we do before we do Tonglen, by the way. Let's just look at those first two. If we're wishing sentient beings to be happy, what does that mean? We're wishing some sort of joy on them. Why is that? Are we giving them suffering? I hope not. So what's going on here? May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the root of happiness.
Clarity, lack of confusion.
Yeah. Being beyond self. Yeah. Mm-hmm. May they be free from suffering and the root of suffering. So what is the root of happiness and the root of suffering?
I'm wondering if the root of happiness is expansion and opening, and the root of suffering is contraction and closing down.
Yeah, that's it at the level of feeling, right? Whether we're contraction is basically wrapped up in self, and expansion is beyond referring everything to self. And it is, and the feelings that you've described are very much a good way of putting it. So I just thought that was useful in addressing is joy suffering. And if it's genuine joy, the root of which is expansion and non-self, in other words, if it's not about self, then it's not a defiling emotion or emotion the way Khyentse Rinpoche is describing it.
Or as Anam Tupten, who's coming this summer, said in the book, no self, no problem. It's really simple from that point of view. If there's no self attached to emotions, then there is no problem. Because nobody's owning it.
We're not wishing that people are free of pain. We're wishing that they're free of suffering.
Yeah, you could even wish free of pain.
That's not realistic in this life.
At some point the person will be free of pain, but mainly it's a wishing that's not about, can I go out and zap them and fix it? It's may that person
be free of whatever is defiling and harming them. And it's not, may I be able to do it for them. So the essence of these is it's not about me.
So all emotions that are pain are self.
Self-referential.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So there are, yeah, so there are other ways, as Adam Tupton said, no self, no problem. You have to have a self for it to be a problem, yeah. So Buddhism has one thing to teach, right? Non-self. That's all we know how to teach. But it has a million details and a million applications, and it enters into every aspect of our life and every possible way we can confuse ourselves and every way we can train ourselves to see that confusion.
Kind of can look like self is pretty nearly bottomless.
Is it bottomless? Our teachings say no. Okay? That one can be free of it. That's another interesting point. There's very little reason to get into it. All of this, to take the trouble to sit instead of doing watching TV, to do uncomfortable things, to look at pain, to look at fear. If liberation is just some fantasy, then there's no reason to do it all. So, do we have any faith that liberation is possible? I think that's a pretty big issue. It's worth looking at. And there are all kinds of things. I mean, you could feel, no, it's they're just faking it, if you want to believe that. You could say, yeah, maybe, but that's only for these guys who are almost saints. I couldn't do that. You might think that. Or you could say, I see it in some teacher or some person who inspires me, but I don't quite see it in myself yet. Actually, we do, we just haven't recognized it. But, or we could have some tiny little spark of that, and that spark could be a big, powerful motivation to encounter it more and more, to draw closer to it, to overcome fear, and to want to be with it all the time. So liberation is a gradual thing. That is, it's a path. Being liberated is just being there, but approaching it is still path, and path is going to involve fear and awareness.
Emma Chodron said in the Start Where You Are, she said someone told her when she started practicing, like, don't expect someday it's all going to, like, come together and everything's going to be perfect. Like, that's the one she used for that one about fanning off all the fruition. Like, it's not like if you do all the right practices, then you reach this moment like, wow, life is perfect for me, which it doesn't exist anymore, I think.
That doesn't exist.
Right? Right, but just that kind of like, that it is that idea of it's a path, and if you were trying to push to get there, then you probably won't get there either.
Well,
like, moving towards it, but
I think it's just engaged with the path itself.
Right.
I mean, you could say the path is the goal, because the engaging in the path is worthy enough in itself. It isn't like you're going to end up in some big end of the rainbow kind of thing, but more actually really arrive in just the present situation as it is and train your mind to really see reality which is said to be pure without any kind of affliction or problem in itself. So, you know, already that's a lot of encouragement, because we always can take moments and flash, and even just as we learn how to meditate and engage that, bring it into our lives, have moments of rest where the mind really can rest in itself and actually can open up to what's here.
You see, Elise, that's an important thing. That's why all these seals are related. Nirvana is beyond concepts. So if we think we're going to reach a point where all of a sudden everything works and everything is perfect, that's our concept of nirvana at this point. So we're working to go beyond our concepts also. We have this idea, and we can't help having these ideas. We can't grab the whole thing all at once. So there is a... we have to be satisfied in some sense that we're working on the path and relaxing on the path, and that we'll understand more as we move along it, and that we'll go beyond whatever our concept is today.
That'll be for next week. Mm-hmm. No concept.
No, next week you're doing emptiness.
Yeah, no concepts.
Okay. Right, and then we got to do the fourth one. So they're all...
yeah.
They're all totally... it's like the tentacles of an octopus. They're all entwined with each other.
Yeah.
Roberta.
We're trying to be in, the present moment as much as we can, but I did read somewhere that memories are the power to gather roses in winter. And, if Elise has a beautiful day and it occurs to her, if that memory flashes through her mind at some point, that might give her another little moment of joy. It's not like she's grasping at it, but... there are memories that I have that bring me comfort, joy, happiness, and I don't know if I want to be in the present moment every moment.
What about the memories that aren't pleasant, and all the things that you can't stand about your memories? What are you going to do with that?
Plenty of those come too.
So then it's a question of accepting and rejecting. You're caught up in that trap. Wanting to cherish what you like and wanting to abandon what you find you don't like or find painful.
Well, what if, do you think it would be possible to not abandon it but not dwell in the painful? And, sometimes it's possible to get really depressed, but you can think happy thoughts. No.
And then it's all
better. Yes. Shirley Temple told me.
Shirley Temple, Ruth Boucher.
Sadistic Ricochet is what I but there are painful, difficult memories, and I have them, but then I don't have to insist that they go away, but I try not to dwell. And we would try not to, if people are battling depression, they can really spiral down.
Isn't that a little bit of what we're talking about, in a way? It's just the not dwelling on them. Or trying, or
you still
choosing if you want to dwell or not.
You still have a relationship with it then.
Yeah. I'm not... with the bad memories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you let all memories come and go? In other words, not cling too tightly to the pleasant ones, but... okay, that's a pleasant memory, but I can still be here.
Yeah. But what if I'm, yeah, I mean, but what if I'm feeling lousy and I wish to have a pleasant memory and I go, you know, there's enough of them so I don't have to go fishing too hard to find them.
But I think the point of why we're here mm-hmm. and what we're doing with our meditation practice is to learn how to open up nakedly to the situation right now.
Yes.
And when you do that, you find fundamentally in itself, there's nothing threatening about it at all. This is, I mean, I speak from my own experience. To try to dwell in a memory to sort of dress up the pleasant moment because I don't want to deal with what I'm experiencing mm-hmm. is not actually to see what I'm doing. It's not actually to be honest with myself, to own up, why do I feel this way? What are the causes and conditions that make me feel the way I do? Whether I'm in a up or a down mood, the fact is, I mean, can I actually just learn how to surrender to just being here? This is where, when we talk about all this stuff, we're talking about emptiness, nirvana, we're talking about opening ourselves up right now to what is here. Not some imaginary future lovely spot where everything's going to be hunky-dory. It's actually just as it is. That's what we're learning, and to make friends with that. So we don't have to worry about trying to patch up all of our bad memories and try to emboss all of our good memories to, you know, so that they won't leave us, because it's enough to just be. I mean, this is actually the fundamental teaching, is to completely open ourselves up to nowness.
But we might not have confidence to do that. So if you feel that you need a lollipop, I mean, maybe you should have one.
I was just going to say.
But let's look at the story of the Buddha that he told. Yeah, okay, you want to say something first?
Can I have a grape lollipop? So the story, yeah, I mean, I just, yeah, the idea of opening up into, like, now, and it's not threatening.
It feels very threatening, yeah.
Well, if the practice is not to worry, I mean, you're taking it one step at a time. If you do if you do meditation practice, it's not like everything's going to suddenly clear up, but it sort of opens in gradual steps.
Yeah.
And you do gain the confidence because you begin to find yourself relaxed in that situation. It's when you actually just really find yourself relaxing and releasing. And then we get caught up, you know. It's not like we're going to just stay there.
I want to hear about the lollipop again.
We are all with a certain amount of strength, and we may not be ready to come out of the cave we're in too much, and we keep working on it, and we'll do it a little more. The story here about the Buddha. And we tell stories not because anyone could possibly prove what was going on in the Buddha's mind, or even, you know, a story is a story, okay? It's not historical fact. It's something we can learn from if we look at what's happening, which is how do we wake up? And how do we become brave enough to really wake up? And he was really ready at that point to go all the way. And that's when the obstacles became the most fearful, actually. And they're called Maras here. So Mara is attacking him with all kinds of weapons, right? And he's not distracted. The weapons turn into flowers because he's just not buying into them. But then Mara has more things. Now come the most seductive maidens and intense visual fantasies of paradise and the most beautiful way to be sexually seduced. And he has to say, okay, that's another type of dream. I'm not going to fall for that dream either. These are all dreams, and I'm going to make friends with those dreams, the terrifying ones and the seductive ones, and just be here. Well, the fact that you and I can't do it as powerfully as that right now, and we might want a little lollipop. Isn't terrible, okay? But we can push a little harder, and then push a little harder.
There was a really, for me, a profound moment in a journey through intense therapy where I felt like a tidal wave was coming down on top of me. Mm-hmm. I would often have dreams about water, and they were very, very much indicative of what was going on inside of me. And I thought to stop therapy because I seriously felt like this tidal wave was going to crush me. And my therapist called me up and she said, you have a tidal wave coming down and you can push the pause button. And we're going to take a teaspoon and we're going to go address it one teaspoon at a time. And that was kind of her point, was that we don't have to take on the whole tidal wave. We can just have the teaspoon and then turn around and get a lollipop. And then go back with the teaspoon. And the key thing is having, in that instance, having somebody who knows how to take people through facing the tidal wave one teaspoon at a time.
So no one's telling you should do this perfectly.
Okay.
I should be this, I should be that. You are what you are, I am what I am. And at the same time, we can take another teaspoon, yeah, and move beyond. And maybe we'll soon be dealing with whole buckets, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about that when I'm driving, I'll have the news on, and there's parts of the news that bother me a lot and bring stuff up. And sometimes I just wasn't listening at all, and other times I'll be listening and I'll like turn to like classical music because that's not going to rattle me the same way. And I, you know, and I was like, well, that's better because I'd rather be calm while I'm driving than agitated and worried. And then I tried to use it to notice what were the things, what were the stories that bothered me, and what were the ones that didn't. And just sort of just notice that piece of where was it causing. Not that I wasn't going to switch off, like I couldn't listen to any stories about certain items, like those were like the radio went off, like immediately. And there was something else that was about the police attacking black people. And I listened to the whole thing and I thought, I don't think that's going to happen to me, but I'm afraid of people like Tsarnaev. You know, that whole idea if you're walking down the street and there's a bomb there in Boston, which you think he thought he was safe. And so it was like, where I didn't feel unsafe, it didn't bother me to listen. And it made me think, like, I don't care as much about that. There's me worrying about me.
Is this fear or anger?
Some
of them are anger, aren't they?
Most of them are terrible fear.
Fear,
that's like terrible.
Fear.
Fear, or it touches too close to something that's painful. And
okay.
I can't deal with that emotion there. So it's a knowing that that's a really strong emotion, that driving the car is not a good time for China. See how I feel about this. Tomorrow wins there, you know. Like, I got to drive my car.
We can also notice how we work, because it occurred to me that when we get angry, getting angry at injustice on the stories, we get angry because our basic nature is compassion. And we can start to see that too, at the same time that we're being angry. Compassion is not wanting to see someone suffer horrible injustice, right? So we can start to... Emotions are complex. There are layers to them. And we have some opportunity to start to unravel it by just being there to the extent that we can.
There was a teacher who I studied with, not personally, but through his teachings, and Gurdjieff. And one of the things he had said, which I think is very appropriate here, was think with your heart and feel with your mind. And I, you know, when you just dwell on, look at that notion of feeling with your mind, what does it mean? I mean, it actually means a willingness to just explore what actual feelings are occurring, and not invent or just sort of imagine what a feeling might be, but you're actually working with, you know, what your feelings are and what they're doing and why they're there. So all of these sore spots, wounds, and all of these things can be open to clarity. So it's part of learning how to trust ourselves when we go, this is where the meditation helps us learn how to trust ourselves, and we can actually look at what arises and be relaxed in seeing it directly and clearly, not being afraid of just seeing it revealed for what it is. So we're going to go into emptiness next week, which is all about how we can cope with all this stuff, the tidal waves and the the bonfires and everything else.
So next week, read the next chapter. And this is on the, it's been updated, but it is on the website. And you could look at some of these questions, because I think that they're intended not to have yes or no answers, but to do some further provoking.
Yeah, I would appreciate if people look at some of these questions and bring some of their thoughts to next week's class as well, and seeing how they interface with the material we're looking at.
Anything else?
Did you say they're all equally relevant to our, to the talk next week, the questions?
Oh, I can't say equal. I just dumped them out into my mind. Maybe want some that are more,
I think,
worthy than
in terms of trying to make an assessment about how we are, where we are with class, is just making sense. You know, what is, where is it, where can I go with this? And it'll help us just sort of strengthen our kind of like, we want to be a little bit questioning when we're reading material. We don't want to just sort of go, okay, yes or no. You know, just question it. Just like I think we've had a really lively discussion about these chapters in this book. Strongest response I've ever heard at all at first last week, you know, like, let me out of here. kind of thing. So all of that is just meant for us to explore. You know, we're just looking, trying to understand how we can, whether it's something to work with, we can employ it, engage with it, bring it out of the path.